Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
You're listening to the Sans Pants Network.
Home of comedy,
culture,
adventures,
and ghosts.
Hello and welcome to Scaredy Boys, a podcast where three cowardly friends discuss horror movies. I'm Damien.
I'm Sean.
And I'm Tom.
And for this episode, we watched Dream Scenario. Dream Scenario is a 2023 American black comedy fantasy film written and directed by Christopher Borgli. It follows Paul Matthews, a hapless family man who finds his life turned upside down when millions of strangers suddenly start seeing him in their dreams. When his nighttime appearances take a nightmarish turn, Paul is forced to navigate his newfound negative stardom.
Boys, I'll say this before any, not even boys, listeners.
Yes, yes, yes.
Before any of you fuckers come for us being like, why are you watching a dark comedy? If you go to IMDb and you type in Dream Scenario, and at the top of IMDb, you get that little scrolling bit that gives you what its genres are.
Uh-huh.
I'm going to read them to you.
In order?
Yep. Dark comedy, psychological horror, comedy, and horror.
Ooh.
It's in there. Okay. It's in there.
Okay. IMDb, I've found, is quite lenient on genre.
Yeah. You know what? I don't give a shit.
Letterboxd. He's the IMDb detective.
Letterboxd is not a horror.
No, I checked that too. Yeah.
It's a coward app, if you ask me.
Yeah, well, yeah. There you go.
I'm just going to do a bit of really quick research just to see if...
What does this research involve?
Yeah, so
people inside
Cocaine
the world.
Bear does not have any horror elements in it at all.
It did at one point, though.
It did.
I remember it did. And then they took it away.
I mean, it definitely... Cocaine Bear, just... We're going immediately off topic, but Cocaine Bear does definitely
doesn't
fit
sound
into...
Like us.
It does fit into that category of animal
creature
attack.
Feature.
Like, yeah,
Jaws.
Yeah,
there's a survival horror aspect to it.
Of course. Yeah. So I still justify that.
Yeah.
It's
100%. So shut up. Yeah. No one who has currently come out.
Yes, right. But Dream Scenario...
Could get some backlash. So, Sean,
yes.
You're the one who advocated for this to be done on Scaredy Boys. I definitely don't disagree, but can you explain for the listener why?
Yep. Tom watched this one first. He told me about it, and I was surprised that it was out. He's like, yep, check it out. I loved it, and I thought, brilliant. I'd seen a very positive review from Tom. I'd seen a review from Alexi, a friend of the show.
Yeah.
Alexi Toliopoulos. And he said, I think in his review, that it was one of the funniest movies that he saw for the year.
Right.
So, I'm going into it, and I'm thinking, all right, let's go. Nick
let's
Cage.
Have a few chuckles.
It does say dark comedy.
Yeah. Here we go. My takeaway from the film is it's a horror film.
Yeah.
Like, it's Freddy Krueger.
Right.
It's Groundskeeper Willie from The Simpsons episode. Big time. And you were going to watch it, Damo, and I deliberately didn't tell you that I saw it through the lens of horror because I didn't want to shade your opinion
of
it.
Yeah.
But you had a similar vibe, I think.
I mean, definitely, like, just we're probably jumping the gun a bit, but, like, some of the scenes when it takes that negative turn are, like, little horror one-offers. Like, they're genuinely scary, and they manage to make him terrifying. But then I also think on a broader spectrum, the horror of what his existence becomes.
Yes, 100%.
Like, that is truly, like, he's going to a diner to have something to eat and ends up getting in a fist fight. Like, he's done absolutely nothing wrong on any measure. And the idea that everyone around you has, like, turned against you in this way, that you're a pariah? What's what I'm trying to say there?
Pariah.
Pariah.
You're a pariah.
You're a pariah. And you can't even, like, eat out. And you literally, what have you done? Nothing. The whole world has gone through that thing of, like, you wronged me in a dream and now I'm angry at you.
Yeah.
The whole world is doing that to him. Like, there's no justification for it, yet he has to cop it. Like, that, to me, that is true horror. Because facing that and being so helpless and having everyone, even the people closest to you, turned against you is awful and terrifying, and it would just be a horrible situation to find yourself in.
Yeah. I even just think, so the aspect of this film where, you know, random people are having this same man appear in their dream every night, and often it's the same thing, but it does change over the course of the film. The surrendering of control, that aspect of it, and even for that, like, you feel it the most with the students at the university.
Yes.
These kids who are utterly terrified of this man. They can't even be in the same room as him anymore. When he walks into the room and says hello.
It's a great scene.
That's it. We're out of here sort of thing. And it's just, that's horrifying. And add on top of that, you've got that pretty horrific home invasion.
Oh,
where nothing bad ends up happening. Home invasion stuff is very scary.
Yeah,
I think.
True.
Because it always reminds me of the M. Night Shyamalan film with Bruce Willis.
Unbreakable.
Mm. There's that scene in that where a guy in a hood comes to the door, and it's like a video camera sort of angle shot of it from memory. And he's just like, "You have a nice house. Can I come in?" And he starts ripping at the door.
Yeah.
Like, that's chilling.
That's
someone waking up being disorientated at night, and there's a guy with a, I think he's got a knife, does he? Guy with a knife saying, "I have to kill you."
Yeah.
And he's freaking out. He's crying, this man.
Yeah.
He's having a breakdown, but he's like, "I have to kill you." That's horrific. That's horror movie stuff.
Can I tell you something about that scene? Yeah. So this is from IMDb trivia, so like take it with a grain of salt, but...
No. Do not come into my house that is your house.
I've just walked into your house and done a shit on the floor.
Yeah, don't you be doing
that. Tom, do you mind if I just do a quick shit on the floor?
Don't you come into my dreams and fucking be a fucking scary Nick Cage, okay?
So, apparently, from IMDb, Nicolas Cage added the stalker scene to the script because it happened to him in real life. He based it off a real life incident.
Nicolas Cage did?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, I don't know, like, if it's one for one, but I can imagine Nick Cage, again, being so known and being so in the public psyche.
He's mimetic.
Yes, he is indeed. That's a great word.
He's mimetic as a... We've talked about this when we've talked about this movie just amongst ourselves, but he's perfect for this character because, of course, if you're going to have a character actor that was going to invade everybody's dreams, it has to be someone like, there's a reason why there's that movie with him and Old Mate in it about the unbearable weight of massive talent. Yeah, like, he's a meme.
Yeah.
He's
nearly the only person that can play this role in this way, I think.
Yeah. Yeah. Yes.
Where he transcends, he cuts right through it. Like, you believe it that, Nicolas Cage could be in my dreams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. If you had a dream, you said to your partner, I had this dream, Nicolas Cage was there. They wouldn't go, wait, Nicolas Cage?
Yeah, yeah.
Or if you did that for, like, some...
I had a really weird dream last night and, like, John Lithgow was in it.
Yeah. Like, I think...
I don't know why.
Character actor Margot Martindale was there.
That would
she's in all of my dreams.
Yeah. All right, question.
I've got
to
have it populated with characters.
What
actors.
Character actor would you want popping up in your dreams?
Like, pretty, like, every night?
Pretty regularly. I guess so. That's the
premise. See, I had Ewan McGregor invade my childhood dreams for too long. So, this is.
All right. We might be stepping on some tender.
No, I killed him. Okay. So, in my dream. In real life.
Can we clarify? You killed him and then you never had the dream ever again.
That is correct.
I love it. The power of that is amazing.
There is something huge going on in Tom's head.
Yeah, what are you cooking over there, mate?
Don't even worry about it, boys.
I will worry about it. Fucking hell.
I'll be peering in your dreams.
Well, look,
tonight.
Have a little think. We can keep going.
Yeah, that's a, that's
we'll
a huge
that
question.
One. We'll come back to it.
Character actors aren't as prominent now as they used to be.
They're coming back.
No, but we
actually think there's a loss of character actor and there's a loss of leading man. And I think everyone is kind of fitting
converged
this,
a little bit.
Yeah, there's this weird gray
character
area there.
Character actor used to be odd-looking people who couldn't fit the leading man, leading lady bill.
Yeah.
And now in a lot of things, I mean, this is a cheap shot because I haven't really seen it at all, really. But like something like Riverdale, I assume everyone in that's just hot, aren't they?
Yes, right.
We're getting a lot of product like that where every character, even if it's just a little supporting character, has got one line. They're just an attractive person.
They're a stunner,
You don't have as many uggos.
But then you have things like, we were talking about this just before off mic, you've got something like Napoleon, where Joaquin Phoenix feels like he should be a character actor, but he's somehow managed to scrape this niche of leading man roles where he's still playing a bit of a freako.
Love that, because you also have the opposite of that. I think Brad Pitt is a character actor type of actor stuck in the looks of a leading man.
Oh, I think Gosling is also similar, but he uses it to his advantage.
I think Chris Pine is similar.
I was going to say Pine
would love to be a character
niche.
Actor, but he's so fucking perfect.
Yeah.
He can't do it.
Yeah.
Whereas then the weird version of that is like, this feels like a mean start to the podcast, but like someone like Benedict Cumberbatch 20 years ago, he'd be playing like the weirdest dudes in the world.
Mate,
he'd be winning awards for it.
10 years ago, you would have looked at him and been like, no thanks. I don't want this. And now he's a fucking sex symbol.
Yeah.
Don't know how
it
works.
But character actors are sexy too in their way. It's like an edgy sexiness to him. Sean. I know who your character actor in your dreams is.
Oh,
and the reason I got confused, it's John Hawkes.
I do love John Hawkes.
Mm. Yeah. He's...
I do love him.
I'm watching the latest season of True Detective and he's in it. And he plays a big piece of shit as he always does in everything. But he's also just a weird, complicated guy.
He's always a weirdo. Yeah, John Hawkes, that's a good call because I was struggling to think of one because of the death of character actors. So Paul Giamatti is a character actor man who is shoved into the leading role.
Yeah, yeah. But always in a role that's like he's the leading role, the leading man in a film where the leading man is a bit of a fucking weirdo.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He's weird.
But this is where, the lines are blurred now. Another one I want to throw at you, Toby Jones.
Oh, he's a character actor through and through.
Okay, there
he's,
you go.
He's never graduated for me to a leading man sort of status.
Yeah. I've just thought of the perfect example of a guy who looks like a leading man, wants to be a character actor, and tries to do it from time to time. Jake Gyllenhaal. That man loves playing freaks.
Yeah, that's
he's made for being freaks.
Yeah, trapped in a handsome body.
Trapped in a beautiful body.
Yeah.
Another modern day character actor who's sort of come through in the last decade or so, Nick Offerman.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Where I can't really see him. I've seen, because I'm a fan of his. So, like, I'll watch some of the more obscure stuff that he's done where he's sort of a lead, but it still feels like he should be a character actor in that role. And I think when he does, he fucking smashes it.
He's, to me, is not well suited to being a lead.
Nah, I agree.
And I think he's one of the most talented actors there are. Like, he's incredible.
Yeah.
But he's a great choice for a character
actor. I'm now thinking other places and I'm thinking of things that I've watched recently after thinking about True Detective. I've watched the new season of Fargo. Jennifer Jason Leigh.
Ooh.
Very good character actor. Always plays someone a bit fucked.
Yes.
Always playing someone a bit kooky. She often has like a transatlantic accent too,
even
if the movie is contemporary.
That's so funny. That's so
and
true.
It's like,
I've never
that's
picked
a
up
good,
on that.
It's such a good
that's
voice.
That's very funny. Yeah, yeah.
She's great. And speaking of Fargo, what's her name? Oh my God. From the movie and from all the Coen Brothers movies.
Francis.
She's a character actor who's become a leading lady.
She's a character actor that has done a lot of leading lady stuff. Yeah.
But she's in Fargo, a character actor.
While we're in the Fargo world, and I always get this, I butcher this guy's name. He was Lupin in Harry Potter. David Thewlis.
Yeah.
Yep.
That's a character actor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary Oldman.
He loves being a grotty little fuck with bad teeth.
The other two, speaking of like Harry Potter things, Daniel Radcliffe wants to be a character actor.
Yes. Yeah.
He happened to be one of the largest franchises of all time.
Right.
Elijah Wood wants to be a character
actor. Yes.
Yep. Vigo. There's a lot out there.
There is.
There's a lot of character actors. And Nick Cage is in that mold, which is why he works.
Well, Nick Cage is like, so yeah, let's jump
to bring us back.
Because obviously he is somehow both. At once, he's an old school leading man who can draw a crowd because of his name. He is also a character actor playing little freaky roles and just making odd choices. He is like, I mean, the whole thing of him being an enigma in the Hollywood model is obviously, like, Community did it best in that episode where Abed tries to figure it out. But generally, I think it's another reason why he's the perfect choice for this movie.
Did you read how they tried to change him appearance-wise?
No, I didn't, know.
So they thought, yes, he is perfect for the role, but also, we like, on the page, this is a bland man, like a boring man. And we need to sort of have the audience approach it and not to see Nicolas Cage in that role.
Oh, okay, interesting.
Like it's this balance of like he's actually perfect for it, but we also want them to strip away the Cage.
We need him to disappear.
Of the man.
Yeah,
we need him to disappear inside the role. So they shaved his head. They gave him it's a very small tweak, but he's not got his nose. He's got a prosthetic nose on.
Really?
Just little tweaks like that, and the clothing, they made him just look like a boring
just
dad.
Layers,
layers, and
I will say this. Fucking works. He even though it's Nicolas Cage.
You've said this to me, Tom, that
he vanishes.
Disappeared. No, see, I don't think he
disappears.
Did. For me, he didn't.
He's just a weird guy.
It's a great performance, but I'm still watching a Nicolas Cage.
I think it's a truly fantastic Cage performance in the sense that I can see where you're coming from, where I can get like 70% there because just the way he's speaking, his choices are like, I don't know that I've seen them before. Like, he's obviously made
the little giggle
weird choices. But yeah, it's like he really does know, he's really honing in on who this character is and really finding it and delivering it. And I don't think it's similar to something he's done before, but I still cannot not see Nicolas Cage.
I think he disappears, sorry, Tom, more in the film Pig than
interesting. Yeah, fantastic movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, he called Pig Dream Scenario and The Unbearable Weight of Massive Talent, this kind of meta trilogy.
Okay.
And with Dream Scenario, he actually wants to retire. Like, he doesn't want to be a film actor anymore. And I read an interview with him recently where he's actually become fascinated by TV. He's never been a big TV show watcher.
Yeah.
But suddenly he's like, They're making some good stuff on TV.
I love that he's like a bit late to the game.
Yeah, coming to prestige television 8.5 years after it like ended.
Oh, like even longer. It's probably been 20 years of like gold standard TV.
Right. When did The Wire come out?
Yeah, and he's like, yeah, you know what? I think I might like to try the long form character stuff. That's good.
I would love to see him in a TV show.
He would be great. Breaking Bad was what it was. He goes, I've recently been watching this show called Breaking Bad.
No, he didn't.
He is my parents. They've just started watching it too. And my dad keeps, they've finished it now. Yeah. I'd ring my dad and he'd be like, so this show... Wow. I'm like, yeah Dad, it finished about 15 years ago. Like,
what,
fuck.
Yeah. I've got to know. What is he? Like, has it somehow popped up on SBS On Demand or something? Like, how is he catching it?
No,
now?
They have Foxtel, so I think it's just on there. But I think the thing
is. They just finally run out of stuff. And the footy season's not on. Footy season's not on. Mum can't watch AFL 360.
Yeah, they just.
They're like, oh, 15 years ago, Thomas told us about this show called Breaking Bad.
It's so funny. They just go through these things. Like, it's like my dad when he started watching Game of Thrones. Mm. He just started at season 5.
What?
Like,
crazy.
We were talking about it.
Oh, that's stressing.
And he just started watching it. What's the whole back half of the season? And then recently was like, yeah, watch the first 4 seasons. That's an incredible show.
He commits hard though, doesn't he?
Like, he does. When he goes...
At one point he was just like, the MCU, and then he watched nearly all of them.
He watched a bunch of them. He's a fascinating consumer of media.
Mm. Yeah.
But it's nice to know that Nick Cage is my dad.
There is something warm about
both
that,
balding, both wearing layers, both wear glasses. But I reckon my dad...
Both in my dreams.
Could appear in people's dreams. If someone said to me, like if a bunch of random people said to me, I've been dreaming about your dad lately.
Yeah, yeah.
It would be maybe the least surprising
fact of all time. I've yet to meet your dad.
It's so funny.
I know.
It seems we've crazy. Known one another for like I'm almost... Like, we've known one another for 10 years.
Yeah, 10 years.
10 years now. I know.
You've
crazy.
Never met like...
But I'm going to meet him and I'm going to be like... You're that fucking dude from my dreams.
Yeah.
And he'll just wink and go, yes, I am.
Speaking of in your dreams, this movie fucking rocks.
Yeah.
Regardless of what we think about Nick Cage disappearing, he plays the role perfectly. And one of my favorite aspects of this is the dynamic of his relationship with his wife.
Yeah.
The fact that both of them are like not perfect or not great and are both a bit boring and both lie about how things are actually going.
Yeah.
There's that great sequence where he lies about how much better the meeting about the book goes than it actually goes. Yep. And she lies about how, oh, they've offered me to work on this project, even though she's like just awkwardly insists to be involved in it.
Right. And she asks, did you record it? And he says, no, but we've heard the recordings. And they're bad.
Yeah, they're bad. They just tell little white lies to one another.
Yeah.
And so you get this like, when everything starts to spiral and he becomes fixated on, you know, holding on to this dream thing and fighting it and being ridiculous and all the choices that he makes make sense for who he is.
Right.
And then her reactions also make sense for like their dynamic.
Right.
But the one thing they do beautifully is even though there is a bit of that going on is that like you can tell that they love one another. It's flawed. It's at times frayed. But they love one another. And then the final sequence of the film.
Yeah.
It's beautiful.
When he
comes and rescues her in the talking head suit.
She's character actress Julianne Nicholson.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. I hope I've got her first name right.
Yeah.
I think you are bang on.
She's Jules Nicholson, and it's my duty on any podcast.
Right. Sean.
She comes up. Yep.
You are correct.
Thank you. It's my duty on any podcast where she comes up to say that she's in a stunning 5-star film called Togo.
Oh,
yes. People need to check it out. She's brilliant.
Togo's great, yeah. Yep.
She's a character. She's a really good character too.
Mm. She's really good in this. And this is, I think I've said this to both of you. This is one of those films where in a different award season year with other films perhaps, this could easily have like snuck in for original screenplay, maybe director, maybe film, but definitely for acting. Like she could have got a supporting nom. He could have got a lead, but it's just, for whatever reason.
It's coming out in 2023, which we did a mammoth 3-hour eye cramps episode recapping our ten best of 2023. And 10 was such a hard number to get down to. Like all of us had a crazy amount
of feasted this
honorable
year.
Mentions. Yeah. So again, I think, it's been lost a bit in this glut of really great cinema.
Wherever it came out this year.
This year? Yeah.
Would have had a bit of a shot, I reckon.
I agree, man.
Yeah. I also think the award that it deserves the most recognition for outside of the acting is editing. The way this movie is edited, cut together, the decisions they make, the random little like flashes to certain scenes and then it jumps back. The fact that they choose not to show the restaurant scene at the very start, just as it happens, but cut to him in the car later playing the audio and then cuts back to the restaurant scene with the audio off the phone recorder.
Like,
just so many of the little choices it makes are so good. That whole sequence where he brings the kids back when him and his wife have separated right towards the end. And they have that moment where she kind of like bonds with him and come for dinner. And then it just like smash cuts and it's like, that didn't happen. That's just a dream.
This is a movie for me. It elevates a lot in the last probably 10 minutes.
Right.
With the choices made in the directing, in the editing. I still hold by, I think that it should have been probably nominated in the original screenplay section.
Yep, yep.
Such a powerful idea.
Did it get any noms? I don't think it really did.
I don't think it did. You know, for me though, so I at one point had this in my top five of the year and then it probably slipped out of the 10.
Mm.
It's in the mix. Like, it's a great film. I really loved it. It has slipped for me. And I think it's because this film could have taken three different paths.
Yep.
And possibly for my own personal preference, it took the least interesting one. Right. And that is that it settled really firmly in the back half into cancel culture.
Yeah.
Where I think I'm most interested in the horror aspect of it.
Yeah, it chose the thematic path rather than the genre path.
I love that invasion of the subconscious and all the possibilities of that.
Yep.
And I wanted to see more horrific dreams and push in that direction, which is a different film.
It's completely,
the cancel culture stuff I actually quite liked.
Yeah.
But it also could have leaned further into a comedy. It could have been very much about this man going through this and played it in a more comedic sort of way.
Yeah. Sean, I disagree. I think it is funny. I think it is very, very funny. And
that's,
I think
the difference of opinion
the comedy
that Tom and I had, where I'm like, Tom was like, it's fucking funny, it's a great comedy. And I was like, it's a horror movie, man.
It is a horror too.
Yeah. I see the funny bits in it, but for me they're outweighed by the horror and probably the suggestion, the grey areas of the horror.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Well, if we're calling it a horror,
yes.
Can I ask?
Yeah.
Were we scared?
Yeah, I'm unsettled by it for sure.
Yeah. I think also because the horror elements that do play out initially when it's just like, when the dreams go bad, basically. For me, I was like, because you hadn't set me up for it. Yeah, it kind of come out of nowhere. And they're extreme. They're like, it's really giving you that these people are genuinely, like, on some level, afraid of him now.
Yeah.
And to do that, they have to sell it. They have to sell it by giving a genuinely scary little horror moment that is pretty effective.
You know what's great about it, too, is the whole unknown of the thing.
Yeah.
Like, everyone's got a similar vibe of dream, even though the dreams are different. And it's great to see him in his classroom, where he's really excited to hear everybody's dreams.
Yes.
But in all of them, he's actively doing nothing.
He's so passive.
And he's so annoyed because it's like, but that's what I am in real life. I do nothing. I want to be doing something incredible.
I love that he does nothing. Then you get that pivotal moment where he learns someone had a dream where he's very active.
Oh, yes, he is.
In a sexy way.
Yeah.
Then he has that moment that goes horribly wrong for him. And then from that point on, all of the dreams he is very active in the worst way possible.
Yeah, so I wanted to ask you boys about that. So, like, I've got a theory, but, like, what do we think causes that change? Is it that moment of pre-ejaculation and flatulence in that scene? Because there's also that pretty quickly paired with that moment where his work gets stolen, the intelligence is in this woman's essay or book or whatever it is, and he finds out and he's basically powerless at doing it. What do we think it is about those moments?
I think that with the information the movie gives you, that's the shift. That's suddenly it's the embarrassment and the shame which turns to anger. And that anger is then felt by everybody else. And that's what I love about it, because it is ambiguous and unexplained.
Yeah.
So that sudden sort of shift towards violence and fear is really effective and why I think of it as a horror film.
And I think it also, like, to me, where it's again scary because it is that gray area that you mentioned where it's like, okay, he has some level of control, not control, but like
influence.
He is influenced. Yeah, great word.
Yeah.
He is influencing this in some unknowable way, and it's getting very dark. Like, who is this guy at the center of him? Is he going to become the guy from their dreams? Like, for me, I was thinking like, well, he wants to be this active guy. And now in their dreams, he's being active in the worst way possible. Are we going to see that play out now in the real? And again, yeah, that's a horror path. No question about it if that went down that road.
Although I do think the way that it sort of ends is the rejection of that by him. Like, he still wants to hold on to the nice or the romantic aspects of himself.
He's still trying, even though he's doing a book tour where he's got Freddy Krueger. Like, he's trying so hard not to be that.
Even how he wants to call his book Dream Scenario, he's still trying to play it as a dream, and then they call it I Am Your Nightmare or something.
I Am Your Nightmare,
Fucking brilliant. Like, that's great.
As writers too, it is horrific to see him get that book and it's there to be launched and signed and released.
Yeah.
He hasn't even seen it yet.
Like, no.
That to me was like, oh, that's fucking horrible, man.
And he sees, he goes, oh, this is a
comment. Oh, it's quite a bit smaller. And
like,
oh, the translation probably trims some words. Right. Out.
And he walks in and there's like, oh, it's quite a big crowd. Yeah. Oh, no.
Downstairs.
He goes into this fucking sub basement.
Did the roof fall on his head at some point?
Puts his head open.
Yeah. It's horrible.
It's awful. Awful to watch. Again, another nightmare scenario.
But that's, again, the horror of it. And I also love the kind of abstract horror of the fact that, you know, were we scared? Unsettled is probably more the point. But the really unsettling part that I love that is unsettling and terrifying because it is so realistic to what would actually happen. Mm. And also very funny is that once this dies down, it is immediately commercialized.
Yeah.
You literally then get Nicholas Braun coming out as this guru weird dude who has immediately started advertising in dream space with influencers. And it's like, that's literally what would happen. We're at the late stages of capitalism in the year 2024. I say that phrase a lot, but that's what would happen.
Yeah.
And so that's so fucking funny, but also terrifying.
True. Like that scene where the influencers come into his dream is so funny, but also so genuinely disturbing.
Yep. Yeah. It's that invasion of
that's the film.
Privacy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, invasion of subconscious is such a scary prospect.
Because that's your zone, man.
And like, I think this film hits it really well, but it does it beautifully in the way that the lens that Tom has seen it through mostly, which is comedy, and mine in horror.
Yeah.
And I think it kind of straddles that line really.
It really does.
Yeah. I'm going to ask the next question because I'm very curious to know your guys' thoughts on it. Did he act wisely or did he act foolishly?
I hate him in the moment where he tries to have sex with the girl.
Yep.
Yeah, you're married to a beautiful character actress, mate. How dare you? You sack of shit.
Yeah, and because we know that he does love her, and like he's like weirdly kind of getting pressured, but he's not. There is a pressure,
I guess, but it felt to me like he cracked so instantly.
Yeah, agreed.
I'm like, Come on, man. I expected better of you.
Now, see, as soon as that comes up for me, anyway,
because
of the behavior you've already seen from him already,
and it's everything he wants. He's being proactive in the dream.
He gets so distracted by her and that conversation. He makes that fucking hilariously awkward joke when they're in the bar together and he's like, oh, chick, please, when she says what year she was born. But then you also get that thing where, like, he kind of commits to it because when he... Is it after it or before he rings home? It's like, oh, yeah, mum's with that guy.
Mm.
And they never completely address what's going on there. At the end of the movie, she's kind of seeing him a bit.
There's enough room there to suggest that something's happened there.
Yes, and that's why maybe he's like, I'm okay to do... But he immediately regrets... Like, he immediately regrets it. He gives into the...
Yeah, he regrets it as soon as he comes and farts.
Yeah. Because he's also
he's got
like
the clarity now, mate.
Yeah, yeah.
He's had
he knows he's a fucking sad loser.
But I mean, even like it was so sad because obviously we have literally seen her dream of him.
Yeah.
Let's call it sexy, but it's still pretty terrifying in my books.
Yeah, it's a terrifying sex dream.
There's danger there.
We know watching that he can never live up to that version of him in her dreams.
Because we know what he is.
We know what he is. And so you're like, this can only go badly in every sense of the fucking word.
Yeah.
Tough watch, I would say.
That's the toughest scene to watch.
Yeah.
Even like, you know, the scene where he runs at his daughter's bed or when he goes after that student in the dream and he starts killing her.
Yeah.
Like, that's chilling.
Yeah, that's fun.
The scene of him coming and farting on the couch is so funny. Full body reaction.
Yeah.
See, I didn't find as much comedy in that scene because I found the scene itself so, like, just this undercurrent of danger and threat to the whole thing.
Yeah,
yeah.
I was not comfortable at all in that
scene. No.
So when he comes and farts, it's kind of like, it probably didn't get the laugh from me that it perhaps deserved because I was a little bit like just It's an unhinged sort of scene. Mm. It's a weird scene. The vibe they've created is really interesting.
Yeah, yes. Yeah.
The whole way through doesn't ever quite... I say it's funny. The comedy never completely diffuses the tension.
Yeah.
Neither does the horror. There's always this weird simmering thing. But to go back to the question, he makes no smart choices at any point in this film, except at the very end, when he dresses up in the big talking head suit and he rescues his wife. That is the only smart decision. For sure. He makes, he, even when he's having that meeting with Michael Cera and he wants to get into Sprite.
Yeah.
But oh, I want to do my book. I want to do this.
Yeah.
Going to that meeting and even sticking around and like believing that they'll give you the thing.
Yeah.
That's a dumb choice. They can't give you what you want.
As soon as they deliver their pitch, he should be like, oh, well, like he wants his nerdy little book. That's clearly nothing in their wheelhouse. Nah. He should be walking away. I think the reason I find this question interesting is because while I agree, he 100% makes every wrong choice you can make. I 100% understand every choice that he makes.
Yes.
And I couldn't honestly say that given the same scenario, would I do any differently? Like if fame basically suddenly hit any one of us and you couldn't help but go, well, I've got some dreams. Maybe I know this is a flash in a pan thing.
Time to leverage it, baby.
But maybe there's opportunity to leverage it. And like, how could you resist that call, I guess?
He's coming from quite a low point as well.
Yes, yeah.
His dream has been crushed. He thinks this idea of his has been stolen.
Right.
He's desperate for recognition and he's sort of, you know, I think, do we see him before the dreams kick off when he's in class? And his class is just boring. No one's
He's talking, it's actually, the whole theme of the film is in that first lecture where he's talking about zebras and herds and camouflage and standing out and how it's dangerous. And you're like, then the whole movie plays out. He's gone from being part of a herd and invisible to standing out, and it immediately means he's targeted by predators and it's dangerous for him.
Yeah. I think this was in part based on a thing that happened, right? A few years ago.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, so there was a viral thing, wasn't there?
Although
I believe it was a hoax.
Yeah.
3,000 people or something like that.
Yes.
All claimed to have had dreams about the same person.
That's it. So, yeah, it was a website called Ever Dream This Man, created by an Italian, Andrea Natalia.
Yep.
And according to him, more than 3,000 people dreamed of the same man for years, with the first case registered in New York City in 2006. And so, basically, it did sort of take off on the internet with lots of people offering different thoughts on it and blah, blah, blah. None were obviously proven definite one way or another, because how could they be? And then finally it was exposed that it was all a hoax. It was actually just guerrilla marketing. This guy runs an advertising agency.
Which is literally using dream. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is like, I think, the subtext of what actually took place is very interesting. So for this guy, this Italian guy, Natalia, he basically said he did it as a way to explore how urban legends and collective myths are created and spread. And you're like, okay, you're an ad guy who's like, word of mouth is still the best way to advertise. Urban legends get spread like crazy. If we can somehow blend that, like, it really felt like this was the first step on a way to get everyone talking about Sprite somehow. And so the idea of someone taking this in the background of this true story being advertising and then it leaning into, obviously, late stage capitalism is a bit scary. That actually, that's a bit chilling.
It's not even that far of a leap, but that's very cool. And I love also the idea that early on there's a few people who mentioned that I've had a dream about this guy.
Mm.
But then they never quite like, because then he goes on the TV, even though they tell him not to.
Mm.
And then there's that point where someone says, yeah, but are they actually dreaming about you, or are they now only dreaming about you because you've been on the TV talking about being in people's dreams?
Fascinating.
Like,
they've seen your face and now subconsciously they may have a dream about you.
Because the only people early on that definitely have are the daughter, one of the friends who knows who he is, and a couple of people at school who again know who he is.
Right.
And then the first outlier is that random woman at the dinner party.
Mm.
He's like, yeah, he kind of looks like Paul. Fun fact. That is Nick Cage's brother. That is actually his brother. And they're like, yeah, it kind of looks like Paul. Like, that's
Coppola.
Coppola, yeah. Mark Coppola.
There's also the woman at the coffee shop, though.
Who, yes, says you're familiar to me.
Yeah.
But I think, doesn't
I don't doubt these people are having the dream.
Oh, yeah, I don't either.
But I do think that is a way that it spreads.
Yes. Yes. Yeah.
Suddenly, if everyone at school's talking about it, they might go, maybe I had a dream.
Yeah,
about it.
I think I did, actually,
the next day, that maybe is it. Yeah, I definitely did.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's interesting the principal never has a dream about him.
Yeah.
Tim Meadows. He is so perfectly cast as that role, too. Just
I love him.
Yeah, you're going to have to take some time off, man. They're scared of you. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah. But one last thing before we move away from Wise or Foolish, because I found it maybe the second most cringe after the sex scene was his apology video.
Oh,
yeah.
Where again, he makes the worst possible choice in that apology video. Because even if his wife is like, why did you do it like this? Yeah. That's not what I told you to do. You needed to genuinely apologize.
You should have hired a publicist.
No, he's got one. It's Michael Cera.
Yeah, but they're not, their judgment is...
They've got another agenda, though. Yeah, other than
but again, he should have just done what his wife said, which was like, be actually sincere and say, I'm really sorry, I didn't mean to, you know. And it starts that way, and then it just evolves into him like losing his mind. You get that great scene where the daughter's just like, well, I can never go anywhere.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, man. I genuinely feel for the daughter in that moment because that is a tough watch.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, boys, how would we do in this situation?
So, are we appearing in people's dreams?
I guess the three of us collectively, yeah. Well, I think we just appear in their dreams. We're just standing there placid like him.
Yep, yep.
But one of us says, Scaredy Boys, new episodes every Friday.
We start, our podcast gets cancelled because people are like, these guys are advertising their podcast.
Right.
In my dreams.
In my dreams. I had a dream. One of them was, they were dressed as Nazis in my dream. Like, I think we'd be okay because I think we wouldn't, like, and I know you said, like, fame would get, and it absolutely would. We'd be like, let's see if we can leverage this. But I don't think we would ever do, we would never be in a fart cum scenario. We're all in love and very happy. No.
A fart cum scenario.
Yeah. Well, we might be, but never with a stranger.
No. Just in the comfort of our own home.
Correct.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
So, I could see, like, obviously, if I've got a few books and that sort of stuff, I could see trying to, like, push those things that already, or even our Patreon or whatever.
Scaredy Boys episodes every Friday.
Right. Join our Patreon, $5 a month. What a bargain. Like pushing those things, but that would be kind of the limit of it. I can't really see requiring
get power hungry.
I don't know, but like, what is the next step for us? I guess.
Well,
maybe,
I think
maybe there isn't one.
Yeah,
maybe we get a little bit big. We get some big names on. Someone goes back and listens to an episode where we trash a movie that people
right. Okay, that's interesting.
No, people then go back in our back catalog, find us talking about how we hated the original Halloween.
Yeah, there it is.
And then immediately, like, John Carpenter's like, fuck these guys. Yeah. And then all these other people
turns the
after
whole
us.
Horror community and against
all,
us.
It all goes bad. So, but again, we do love JC on many other fronts. We just didn't like Halloween.
And also, it's subjective. You're allowed to have differing opinions on movies.
People aren't going to accept that, mate.
No.
I think we've made pretty good arguments for it over the years.
No, but I think the issue is, I don't know about you guys, but people listening to us are pretty reasonable.
Yeah.
We'd get out. We get the issue that happens on Twitter. We'd move outside of our audience.
Interesting. We've got our beautiful audience who genuinely just like the most lovely.
But people who enjoy this sort of thing too, maybe parts of the horror community who are okay with this.
Yeah.
We'd then move out of that. You always see it where someone will be like, they'll post a joke on Twitter. And then the next comment on it will be like, well, this left my audience, so time to mute my account.
Yeah, right.
Then people are like, what the fuck do you mean that you would have sex with a hamburger? That's fucked. Why would you do that? And we would leave our audience, and then I think we would be in France in a basement eventually.
Sharks rights activists picketing the fucking studio. Leave those sharks alone. Stop fucking them, Tom.
Demanding Tom get his tattoo removed.
Yeah.
Great tattoo, by the way, Tom. Well
amazing.
Done.
Sensational. We love this.
Yeah.
Do you want to describe it for the listeners? Are we happy to do that?
Yeah. So I now have a new tattoo.
Yeah.
In the year of our Lord 2024.
One tattoo a year for the rest of your life.
That's technically how it's going.
What's the next one? Sorry, just before we even get to the description of this
I will
one.
Be dead in 2025.
Oh, shit. Okay. I reckon you could get a Pokemon tattoo before that.
Yeah, maybe. Look, I don't know what my next one is.
Godzilla.
Godzilla.
Right. Yeah, I do want a Godzilla tattoo.
Yeah.
Who knows? Yeah. But at this time, I have a tattoo of a shark on my arm. It's a very lovely shirt. It's
generally
great shirt.
It looks
a
beautiful
fucking
image.
Great. Shout out to Red Velvet Tattoo at Crucible Tattoo. I don't know if that's going to help them at all.
If you're Melbourne-based, genuinely, this is an exceptional tattoo.
Crucible Tattoos, though, it's a great place in Kensington. They're very chill. I picked them because they were like, we're really nice and kind. And I'm like, for my first tattoo, which is the cow from the Haggard's Hoodie, Beth. It's just a shark with this fish feels fine written underneath it.
It's gorgeous.
And I love it because this fish feels fine.
Have any comments yet?
From people who've seen it. Yeah, people are like, that looks pretty cool. Everyone's like, but why does it say that underneath it? And my answer to that is, look at him. This fish feels fine.
He feels fine.
And they're like,
they go, yeah,
what?
All right, that makes sense. Okay.
I'm on board.
It's for me.
Honestly, I think it looks fantastic.
Agreed. Yeah, it's
genuinely
beautiful.
I was blown away by the shading. I don't know how these artists do it.
I don't know how they do it.
We don't pay them enough.
No.
Because of...
Maybe you did. I don't know.
quality job, paid a good amount for it. Yeah. Like tattoos.
As you should.
As you absolutely should.
Paid a tattoo amount to a fucking true artist.
It's awesome. And I watched her do it too, because the way I had to sit for it is I had my arm forward so I could watch her do it.
Yeah.
And I watched her do the shading and it's just like dots back and forth.
Here's a question for you.
Yeah, man.
Like, are all tattoo artists great artist on paper as well?
I assume they would have to be.
Are we drawing? Are we stenciling? What's happening here?
A bit of because column A, my question a bit of column to you B. is,
I can't draw for shit, but I imagine people who do have worked on it and worked on it and worked on it. So when you're tattooing people,
so it's a stencil.
What's the process though? Like the first time you tattoo someone, is it a bit of a piece of shit?
I imagine because you practice on like cowhide and pigskin and stuff.
Right. Okay, all right. I wonder how much practice goes in before you're ready to fucking knock it out.
And
of the
some
park
very
like
willing
that.
Friends who don't really care.
Like
I worked with a girl years ago who her friend was getting into tattoo, like wanted to be a tattoo artist, so she got one for free.
Yeah, okay.
She very excitedly rolled into work and showed us. It was the biggest piece of shit I have ever seen. Like a child's drawing of a dinosaur.
Wow.
Yeah. Like,
is that what she wanted though?
She was happy to get a dinosaur, but it looked horrendous. And it got infected.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's not on the tattoo artist. That's on her not taking care of it. Yeah.
But the art itself was like I was really hard not to laugh.
Yeah. I do feel like there must be people who love tattoos and get into it and like basically end up wanting to be a tattoo artist and then having to learn drawing skills because it seems like you'd need them.
Yep.
And then there must be other people who have fantastic drawing skills and get into tattooing because of it. And I think that's the go for your one because it's sensational.
It's a bit like if you go to a hairdresser and the hairdresser has a shit haircut, you're in trouble.
Yeah, walk away.
But you go to a tattoo artist and they always have tattoos. Mm. But if they've got like, they've got a lot of tattoos, and I'm like, everyone at this studio has heaps of tattoos because of course they do. Tattoos are good tattoos.
Yeah.
I'm a big fan. I'll probably get it third.
From the same artist?
Well, I didn't even mean to get this from the same artist. I just went to the same place and was like, hey.
I'd stick with that artist.
Yeah.
Well, it depends on what I get for the next
this
one.
This is true.
Yeah. I might get different something strengths. A little bit goofy.
Yeah, true.
She actually said that she liked the fact that she gets to do some realism.
Oh, cool.
I think a lot of the other stuff isn't as much like that. But it's pretty cool.
Yep.
And we get cancelled, I don't have to cut my arm off.
Okay.
So I think I'd be very sad.
Yes. All right. Good bringing it back. Love that.
That's what I'm here for.
All right. Well, look, this just further proves it's a horror movie because it's just going to end badly for us.
Well, that or I think if we don't lean in, even if it escapes the bubble, we might be okay because eventually the bubble... this is the thing about literally the cycle of this of dream scenario is he's massively famous for like... a minute.
Yeah.
And then he gets fucked off and something new comes along.
Yeah.
His life falls apart.
Yeah.
And then he's vaguely recognized.
Right.
But like, but you look at like, you know, the way kids who are memes as kids or as teenagers who are now adults and it's like, oh, you look kind of familiar. It's like, yeah, I'm from that dumb
I'm a meme.
Remember that kid who...
Yeah. Oh, you're that kid from... And my leg went that way and my head went that way.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
That is such a niche reference.
No one outside of Australia will have any fucking idea what that was.
The original Australian meme.
Yeah.
It's a health insurance ad. I think it's GMHBA or HBA. Yeah. Are you with HBA? That's how the ad would go.
There you go.
Yeah. Octopus came out of the bath.
Bit my head off or something.
Squeeze my guts out is the octopus one. And then the crocodile one is... A crocodile came out of the bath.
Yeah.
Beat me into pieces.
Yeah.
My head went that way. But also the delivery of that is perfect because he talks about it like he's like an old man at a pub.
It's brilliant.
Beat me into parts. Pieces.
Oh, I think that's all the scary talk we have for this episode. I've been Damien.
I've been Sean.
And I've been Tom.
And if you scary listeners like this show, would like to help us out, you can. It's very easy. You can head over to patreon.com/scaredyboys, where you won't just be helping us out, you'll be helping yourself out as well. Because for $5, you'll be getting the biggest, the meatiest pile of beef you've ever seen in your goddamn life.
Beef.
Otherwise, you can also leave us a review wherever you listen. That truly helps us out quite a lot. And lastly, if you have any comments about this episode or just want to say hello, you can email us at 3scaredboys@gmail.com or you can find us on socials at scaredyboys or at scaredyboyspodcast or individually, I'm at damianrob.writer.
I'm at Carney from 55.
And I'm at Orca Trade.
Stay scared, everyone.
We would never be in a fart cum scenario.